From the heart of the earth to the world, RTI.
Welcome to Postcard from Pop Bread. On a day where the British media, whinging poms that they are, ha ha ha, are going, it's -2 and the motorists need to be warned about this. Oh, diddums! My name's Eric Wiltshire, at the base of the glorious sun-covered Tatchy Mountains, where during the week it was -7, the trains were on time, the buses were on time, cars drove, and everything worked normal. Not so much as an apology for a leaf on the line, but that's eastern Slovakia, where I am, beautiful town of Poprad, where we know how to get on with things. In the whinging pom department this week, it's none other than Lee Banks.
How do you do, everybody? Yeah, but I think you're being a bit unfair, because it's freezing here, Eric, and it's snowing. And then it's raining, and then it's snowing. And then it's snowing, and it's freezing. I tell you what, I got up this morning, I was that cold, I thought I'd got the flu. But then I realised the cold had actually reached right inside my soul.
Really?
Really?
In Gay Perry, it's none other than co-founder of the Consumer Action Group, Mark Gander.
Yep. What's hello, everybody. Inside your soul?
I can tell you, it has been raining torrential. I've never seen anything like it here. And of course, the great thing is that it swept all the dog's mess off the pavements. And so, for the first time in a long time, Paris or parts of it are looking relatively clean. Quite amazing.
Gosh.
Lovely.
Yes.
Oh, lovely.
This is not the Weather Channel, boys and girls. This is Postcard from Pop Bread. Your alternative look at the news during the week, and it's. What was that?
What was that?
It's also extremely windy, and I've just had a window blown in.
My good God.
Right.
Listening...
How unprofessional.
Listening on the professional stations of Talk Radio X and Replay Radio, we welcome you to this shambolic affair. Also, we're going to say, we're online, we're on the iPad, on the iPhone, and on mobiles. Because somebody else thinks it's clever to do that. We've been doing it for years. Where have you been? Starting off with some sad news this week, as we do regularly, because we get towards the fun bits at the end. Billie Jo Spears has died aged 74. She was best known for the hit, if you want to call it that, Blanket on the Ground. And I know no more about her than that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and what was Blanket on the Ground about? I mean, it was nothing to do with the Troubles, so it wasn't an Irish song or something, was it?
She was American.
Yes, I know that, but I mean, there were lots of, Irish-Americans.
Oh, right.
And I'm just wondering if it, you know, but I mean, this is complete speculation that maybe it had something to do with the dirty protests in the 1970s.
It was to do with Merlin Podgin.
Who?
Merlin Podgin.
Who's that?
Doing Ladies and Gentlemen's Outside.
Oh, I see. Oh, you mean like...
What did you do with a dirty...
Well, I thought I sounded very intellectual about it.
Well, I was about to tell you a story about in the old days in Slovakia about a field, but maybe I shouldn't.
No. Why? What did you do in the field?
They did Ladies and Gentlemen.
Who were they? Were you watching them?
No! I said in the old days.
How did you know they were doing it then?
It's a story.
So you made it up?
No! It's for real. Anyway, enough of that. Love and sympathy obviously go to those behind Billie Jo Spears. And I know a lot of country fans around will adore her. And so a sad
she
loss.
She was quite cutting edge for country music, I tell you.
She was a bit rocky.
Yeah, she was. She was a good egg and quite pretty.
Yeah, she was pretty, actually. Sad news as well from America. Christopher Hitchens has died after a battle with cancer. He's just 62. And I'm slightly embarrassed to say that the Vanity Fair magazine, which everybody's been talking about, including Tony Blair, former Prime Minister, congratulating Christopher Hitchens on all of his life's work. I've never seen it. Well, I might have seen it, but I haven't read it.
It's a good
issue,
magazine.
The whole thing.
I've never read any of it.
All right.
No, it's a good thing. I said to Eric Mark just before we came on the air that as a gloriously failed writer myself, there are two things that I want to write for before I die. One is Vanity Fair, and the other is Ellery Queen. And it's just a very good way. It's like Cosmopolitan, but a bit ruder, yet as posh as Condé Nast.
Well, you've lost me on most of those ones, I'm afraid. It all went whoosh right over my head.
That's only because you're only 4 foot three.
No, I'm far too young to know about these things. But anyway, presumably...
Anyway, poor old Christopher Hitchens, yeah.
Absolutely. And there's been a whole swathe of comments from people around the world about this young gentleman. And so, again, we send our best wishes to his wife, Carol, and children as well that have been left behind. Moving on to banking, as we do regularly on this programme, I hate these people. I have a passionate hate for these people because I want to know what gives them the right to mess the economy up. These organisations, of which Moody's one, Fitch is another, and Fitch has just downgraded banks, meaning they don't think they're very good, which means everybody panics, the markets suffer, only there's some good news, boys and girls. On the day that this thing came out, normally the next day, i.e. today, there would be panic and red marks all over the stock exchange numbers. Mm. Luckily, it hasn't happened this time. So for once, maybe no one's taken any notice of these organisations, which, I mean, where are they regulated, for goodness sake?
Well, I'm not sure that they are regulated, but I mean,
I don't think they are.
The important thing is, in a way, you could almost say that there's some kind of regulation of the banks. I mean, they don't really have regulatory powers. But on the other hand, it's very nice to find some seemingly independent and non-governmental organisation which is actually prepared to come right out and criticise the banks instead of, you know, really, I think, being in cahoots with them and supporting them. And, you know, really allowing them to get away with the amazing global destruction that they've gotten away with. I don't think it's such a bad thing, and I think that these people's opinions ought to be paid attention to. I'm sure they're brilliant financiers and economists.
Yeah, but the only thing that's going to happen now, Mark, is because these banks, which includes the French BNP Paribas and Barclays in the UK, they'll all now get twitchy. They'll stop lending to the most important people, which are the small and medium-sized businesses. So the economy slows down again. Then the banks are in trouble again because they can't lend to each other and the economy slows down even more. And we're back where we started from even worse this time.
Well, I mean, you know...
The sickest part is it's all our money, isn't it?
Well, it is our money. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's what they're playing with, and they're screwing up our lives.
Yes, but who's playing with it? The agencies, Fitch's and Standard & Poor's, or the banks? It seems to me that the banks have been playing with the money.
They both are.
That's right. Of course, I don't mean the agencies. Of course, I know. I'm
sorry, I do.
What the agencies are saying is really... They've every right to say it, and there
yes,
is obviously the essence of the fact that they can cause trouble by what they say. They can make things worse.
Because they're so
they've
influential.
They've got to be allowed to say it. Yes. They've got to be allowed to say it.
Absolutely.
I mean, what happens if we go in recession because of them?
Well, what can you do? They're not telling lies. They're not making it up. They're not saying something that isn't true. They're just telling the truth, and sometimes it's unpalatable.
Will somebody please explain to me what the truth is? Is these guys who sit down in an office... They have a look at things and go, don't buy shares in Barclays.
Yep.
That's what they say, based on their opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, nobody has to
that's
follow their opinion.
That's what advisors
are for. That's right. But they give their opinion.
So why isn't there another one that's set up different?
Because nobody wants to say it. Because then it would be regulated and people would be forced to. You can't force good news and bad news. You can't force a match.
No, I agree. But it's only their opinion.
Well, I think an important thing is that there's more than one of these agencies, and when they all start saying the same kind of thing, then I think really people need to start paying attention.
Well, my view was there's about three in the world that have got any clout.
Yeah,
that's right.
So, let's take this example then. Lee and Mark Bank Incorporated ticks off a couple of people in these organisations because they're human beings. Don't forget this; they are not computers, and says something, they pick up on it and downgrade your bank.
Mm.
It's their opinion,
Well, you say they're not computers, but actually I imagine an awful lot of what they're doing is based on computer algorithms and computer projections.
Yeah.
And so I think probably actually it's quite reasonable to say that
but
effectively they are
to interpret it, haven't they?
Well, that's right. But, I mean, that's what they have their expertise for. And I think that when they all start talking in the same way, they all start singing from the same song sheet, song sheet.
I think it
would be a bit reckless not to pay any attention.
Well, but okay,
I couldn't agree more. That's the way it's going to be.
I think
it's like
that
an
it's
expert.
Now that we start to realise that these banks are not Teflon, and you know, and they're not.
I agree with that. But let me give you another example of slightly different. I agree. But last week we had the big Eurozone debate, which we reported on here, and David Cameron went back to the UK. Ed Miliband says it was a total disaster because he won't be involved in any talks about the Eurozone in the future. The journalists were all jumping up and down on their bedpans going, oh, it's kept us out of the Euro now, we won't have a voice, blah, 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 blah. And yet the big thing that came out last night is that David Cameron will be involved in the Eurozone debate stroke the second treaty because England's UK's involved in it.
What arrogance, really, isn't it?
I think the more and more you can see that actually Cameron is starting to get away with what he did last week, and I've got a feeling that people are going to be looking at it and saying, what a bold move and what an inspired move.
What I'm saying is, on the bandwagon, saying how good he is, and actually, I think it was a complete faux pas on his part.
No, but last week,
worked in his direction.
All the opinionated experts last week said he screwed up.
Yeah,
and he'll never get back into the debate and the talks and all the rest of it.
And whoops, he's back.
You've then
got. Does that mean Britain's got a lot of power?
It means at the moment, you probably haven't seen it, but where I live, it's big news. The Czech Republic. And Hungary are not going to go in the same way because they don't want the tax tariff to be fixed by other people. Uh-huh. So what was originally 26 has now dropped to 23.
Yep.
You know, and so, again, what I'm saying is opinions don't always match the final reality.
Of course they don't. Of course they don't. And what's happening here? I don't know. Just going on about Cameron, though. Yeah, he made what was seen generally as a mistake. And just events have overtaken him, and it's made him seem quite heroic. And his comments about David Miliband and his brother was below the belt and amateurish and churlish. This man has got no class at all, but somehow survives by luck.
No. I ain't buying that one. No, I ain't buying that one. But staying with the bank.
Even his corporal, Clegg, doesn't back him. Nobody really seems to support him.
As Nick Clegg said, I'm only the deputy, not the Prime Minister.
That's right. Now, what sort of deputy do you want who says that? Yeah, backs off. Whoa, I'm only the deputy. Don't shoot the deputy, lads.
Absolutely. Yeah. But staying with this a minute. Yeah. If banks aren't going to lend, and Mark's mentioned this to us earlier, and I'd like Mark to explain this to me. This is probably one of... Actually, I'm going to say it. Fitch, everybody around the place at the moment that's having their accounts closed, I think you've got a hand in that. Because if you're stopping the banks lending by putting these downgrades on, it means the little people get pinched. And what's happened to the little people recently, Mark?
Well, I think you're quite right. I mean, there is a knock-on effect, but I don't think it's quite as direct as that. I think when Fitch is talking about the banks and the agencies are talking about the banks, I really think they're talking at a far more sort of commercial and merchant level. But it is interesting, this business of hitting the little people, because on the Consumer Action Group, we seem to have been noticing an amazing trend, mainly on the part of the NatWest Bank. Now, I'm going to mention their names because they're basically a nationalised bank. We own them. And I have to say that they're also the bank that has been in the papers recently because of forged documents. And we now find that quite a number of NatWest customers seem to be having, for no reason at all, their well-run accounts closed all of a sudden, without any explanation, with funds in the accounts, just before Christmas, and they don't want to discuss it with anybody. Quite amazing.
Why are they doing this, Mark?
They've got to do it, haven't they? They've got to tell people.
What, tell people what? That we're screwing up your account for Christmas?
Well, you see, what the banks have got to do, what they actually do, are sort of two completely different things. The banks have got a legal obligation, a statutory obligation, to treat customers fairly. And that includes that they've got a statutory obligation, for instance, to communicate with their customers fairly. The trouble is that these obligations, which apart from anything else should be monitored and enforced by the FSA, the Financial Services Authority.
Which I think is being scrapped, isn't it?
Which is being scrapped soon. And it seems to me they're preparing themselves for their scrapping by doing nothing. But that's largely what they've been doing anyway for years. And so these obligations are never enforced. The banks are used to getting away with it. And ho-hum, they're carrying on business as usual.
So what
except it's not business as usual because we've got some... Well, I was going to say it's not business as usual because the Consumer Action Group have got some surprises planned, we hope, for the NatWest and the Halifax, because this is another one, and the RBS, which is another one that have been doing this, and we've got some surprises planned for them in the new year. And if these plans come to fruition, if these surprises come to fruition, I'll be very pleased to talk about it with you.
Good stuff. That's what we like to hear.
Right.
Yes. Absolutely. Let's get one back for the small guys, because that's important. Big debate about Baghdad and American forces this week. Some saying it's a very good thing for Mr. Obama, or President Obama, as it will help. He always said it was a stupid war in the first place. And now they're coming home after, 4,000 soldiers lost their lives and over 1,700 have served.
And just think about how many Iraqis have lost their lives as well. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who've been killed during this war. And yeah, I think it's a brilliant move on Obama's side. It makes everybody look coming home for Christmas. Everything's fabulous, hunky-dory. But really, what are they finally doing? What they're finally doing is what has always been feared. They're dumping Iraq. People say, yeah, they've got a democracy. How can they have a democracy when people are still blowing up the centre of the place? How can they have a democracy when the new electricity systems that have been put in don't work? How can they have a democracy when the sewage system that the Americans put in is a waste of time? All that's happened is we thought they'd be here for another 10 years because we didn't think they'd get rid through all the oil that quick.
No, what about the people that... I mean, Lee, I'm sorry, that's almost comedy.
it was supposed to be.
It is because, to start with, there's a group of people over there that don't care about democracy, let's be honest. And,
absolutely.
And their solution to everything, let's blow everybody up. Now, that's democratic, if you like. And equally, before that, you'd got a lunatic there who could have become a Hitler. He could have.
But this is
he could have. He was sometimes, nuts, barking
sometimes
mad.
I'm supposed to be tabloid, and you are more tabloid than I could ever consider being.
He was a complete barking mad nutter.
It's complete barking mad nutter. Unfortunately, he was our completely barking mad nutter, and we'd worked with him perfectly well and happily and fed him arms for 20 years and thought he was the world, and up until a few weeks before we bombed him, we'd said he was the man who was going to save the Eastern world. He was a god.
I'm afraid that's true, rather than the same way that we did with all the leaders of all those countries.
Let's try 1939, gentlemen.
And we created Iraq.
1939.
No, we invaded Iraq in about 1919 or 1923.
What happened just before the Second World War? The UK Prime Minister was over there going, "Oh, we've had Tiffin. Everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be marvellous." And that's what happened just before the Second World War. He went over to Germany, come back and said, "Oh, no, it's all right." Boom.
But we were selling arms to Saddam a few weeks before we went to war. It's a chronicled, well-known fact. It's like every other country that was been invaded, we've been doing deals with them. Yeah. It was just that his face didn't fit politically anymore. And that's not to defend what he did. No, I'm not defending what he did in any way. But what we have left is a country that was functioning under murder, under bombings, under tyranny. And what we've done, we've gone in and destroyed the country, left it with basically no infrastructure at all, nicked its oil, and then left it still being bombed, still living under tyranny, still living in corruption, and going away saying, "Look at that, we've done, lads. We've done a really good job, haven't we? Come home for Christmas, boys. Well, and let's forget about the poor Iraq."
I'll tell you, I'm absolutely certain that Iraq will be under Sharia law within the next 5 years.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. Very much
and
so.
If it's not under some kind of sort of formal, structured, even if it's enforced Sharia law, then it will be in the middle of massive well, probably amounting to civil war. And I'm sure that this trilogy is going to break down in the new year.
I think we're all going to agree on that. So let's move on. Let's move on to the. Let's move on to 2012 and the Olympics, because apparently thousands of troops are going to be deployed around the 2012 Olympics, which has ticked off America. Apparently, The Guardian claims the US was furious about security plans and wants to send up to 1,000 of its own people, including FBI agents. But the Home Office says it has full confidence in the plans, and so that's not going to happen, I suspect. But I suspect they'll still be there, they just won't be carrying guns.
Well, I have to say, I mean, if that's really what the Americans have said, then I think it's a damn cheek. I have to say, how amazing. Can you imagine what they would say if we sent 1,000 of our own agents and enforcement agents over to the United States? There would be a complete scandal, and quite rightly. This is just amazing news.
Well, apparently,
bloody nerve.
The US Embassy in London.
Potty mouth.
Yeah, potty mouth. Has denied reports that it was unhappy with the UK's security plan. Mm. However, when it comes to The Guardian doing it, they're not sensationalists, are they, Lee?
Well, no, The Guardian aren't sensationalists, but I think we're also missing a point here that we're going to be putting in ground-to-air missiles. What if we could assume? What are you going to do with those? If one of our stars or one of our famous people wants to arrive by helicopter, I tell you what, chaps, don't bother.
Exactly. Honestly.
Why do we need ground-to-air missiles?
I have no idea.
For the firework display at the
Okay, French ex-president Jacques Chirac, off with his head, Mark.
Yes, guilty of corruption. Well, of course he is. But, I mean, the cronyism in the French government, you know, has existed for years. It still continues. You know, the financial corruption, the sexual corruption, you know, I mean, it is just amazing. It never stops. And, of course, you know, they've all got this sort of funny idea that they are exempt for any kind of prosecution while they're in office. And Chirac, you know, part of this case actually depended on him trying to challenge the idea that he should lose immunity once he was out of office. Mm-hmm. They're all up to it. And I have to say...
Well, why has he only got 2 years?
Because
2 years suspended.
No, he's suspended, Lee.
That's what I said. That's what I've just said. He's a suspended sentence. He's not even going to jail.
Yeah.
He's not even reading.
And here's another ex-leader of a Latin type of jurisdiction. And I mean, you can see exactly the same style in South America as well, where as soon as the guy comes out of office and there's some trouble, amazingly, he starts getting dementia and Parkinson's and all sorts of stuff. And of course, as soon as it's all over, you'll find the guy's standing up and he's probably playing sort of Scrabble and Triple Pursuits in the nearest pub.
Absolutely. Well, just to prove the Parisians are potty, a Paris museum has bought Bronte's little book, which measures, for our American friends and those of us slightly older, 1.4 inches by 2.4 inches, has 19 pages. In new money, that's 35 millimetres by 61 millimetres. And they paid...
Well, go on.
They paid nearly £700,000 for it.
And what a tragedy for England to have lost it. And why did we allow it to happen? That's probably one of the most precious bits of literary history that Britain had got. And
is it?
It's gone.
Is it?
Well,
is it?
Yeah, of course it is, yeah.
Why?
Well, Charlotte Bronte was one of our sort of most prolific and dramatic writers, and that was written at the base of English history, where the new age of British ways of being and religion and industry and everything came to a halt.
You can buy a cogwheel for Amazon for nearly nothing.
Oh, I love him. He sounds like me.
But, yeah, well...
Go on, call your mate a Philistine now. Come on.
No,
I can get it on my Kindle probably for about a quid.
I was just going to say that, actually, Eric knows this, that I have put a piece out on Facebook today just saying that anybody who I know... who buys me a Kindle for Christmas, I will publicly disown.
I loved the piece on Sky News the other morning with, what's his name, the Irish guy. Help me out,
Eamon
guys.
Eamon
Holmes, thank you. They were discussing Kindles and presents the other day, and Eamon Holmes says, well, I got one of those for last Christmas. I read the book on it and threw it away.
I know, that's it. The last one I had, I gave to the charity shop when I'd read it.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic.
I know.
No,
you,
you've got to accept this is a piece of history. This is a piece of handcrafted history that belongs to Britain. And for some unbelievable reason, Paris has bought it. Now, what's it got to do with Paris?
What about certain items from the Eastern Mediterranean, which a couple of countries have asked for back, one being Egypt, that are in museums in London, and the English have said, oh no, you can't have those back, we stole them 100 years ago.
Yeah, but that's right, it's not our fault they've lost the marbles.
Do you know who we stole a lot of their stuff from? Not a lot of them, we stole from the French when Napoleon was busy nicking them from Egypt, and we went along and nicked them from him. So it's not such a bad thing, quite frankly.
Right, as we get towards the end of part one, and to avoid boring Mr. Banks too much, look out, boys and girls, it's time for a new look Facebook, which I've already changed my page. If you haven't changed your page, over the next few days, it will change automatically.
Why did they keep changing it? I've not even got used to the last one yet.
Well, this new one, I have to say, most of the experts, which is shocking to me, are saying that it's a winner. And I have to say, I agree with them.
Wow.
Now, that is...
get it immediately.
This is scary, boys and girls. This is very scary. Apparently, the 800 million plus users of Facebook will find out in the next few days what the new timelines, as it's called, will look like. And I actually think it's so, so cool, because on the left side of the screen, you see what you're doing. On the right side of the screen, you see what your friends are doing.
Do you care what your friends are doing?
Well, that's why you're on Facebook normally. Or are you just telling me that the 1,000 people you've got on Facebook are not your friends, really?
No, because if I told you that, I'd be telling them that as well. So exactly. I'm not saying that at all.
And I actually think it's a really clean look. And it looks incredibly well. And it works well. It's very much more like a blog sort of page now, rather than some mishmash of stuff that it was in the past. So don't panic. It's not, and I'm sharing this really so you don't worry, because there's going to be some idiots who go, oh, it's been hacked now. Oh my God. It's not. It is a genuine changeover by Facebook. You've got some time to get used to it, but it will go over finally. And it really does look nice and clean. And it's easy to read.
Yeah, but Facebook by any other name is still Facebook, which is just a way of exposing yourself in public.
No.
Of course it is. That's all you do. What appalls me and amazes me, how many people put pictures of their children on the internet.
I'm not going to say who it is, Lee, because that would be improper, and said person I know would get the ump with me anyway. But
it's going to be me, isn't it?
No, absolutely not. There was a friend of mine who had a heart attack earlier in the week, and we were all a little bit concerned, and said person's wife will not use the phone anywhere near a hospital for some bizarre reason. I'm sure some nurse has given them some crap about not being able to use it. The fact was, I was able to instant message her as she came out of the hospital. I presume she read it. And I actually said, you know, don't worry, blah, 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 blah. And then when husband came home, I instant messaged her on Facebook again, because she doesn't use Skype. And that message went straight onto her mobile. And funnily enough, she was far enough away from the hospital. She phoned me up and said, it's really nice to have him home. So in actual fact, Facebook was a great communications tool for somebody who was very concerned. So I don't see it.
But I have a point to make on that, which is very simple. If you were instant messaging on Facebook, that didn't go to the rest of the world, did it? It was between you and her.
Well, that's your choice.
That's right. So what I'm saying is, the instant messaging service is like sending somebody an email or a personal text.
Yeah.
But what you do with Facebook is you reveal everything from the names and the ages of your children, what they look like, where you live.
We've got to leave it there, boys and girls, because that is the end of part one of Postcard from Poprad.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.